Have you ever wished you could sit down with the greatest minds in history? Today we're getting close. We have a fantastic guest, so legendary, his name alone evokes genius. The wild hair, the mischievous eyes, even a slightly stuck-out tongue. A man whose theories revolutionized our understanding of the universe itself. He grappled with the ethics of atomic power, loved music, and believed in the power of a single idea to change the world. Are you ready to meet our guest? Don't go anywhere, because we're going to have a unique interview with the one and only Albert Einstein. We'll talk about a lot of things, from his personal life to science, his views on life, and on other important global issues. I promise you a lot of knowledge, wisdom, and learning in this unique, fantastic guest episode from English Plus Podcast with me, your host Danny, and the great Albert Einstein. Let's get started. Professor Einstein, welcome to our podcast, and we're thrilled to have you with us. I'm sure everyone in the world knows your name, but maybe some people don't know exactly who you are and what you have achieved in your life. Can you please introduce yourself to our audience?
Well, it's certainly exciting to be a part of this podcast. Thank you for inviting me on your podcast, Danny. Podcast? A newfangled word, if I ever heard one. Well, my name is Albert Einstein, and as you rightly said, most folks have heard that name by now. They might associate it with a wild-haired old man sticking his tongue out, or scribbles on a chalkboard they couldn't hope to understand. But what do they really know? You see, I'm a physicist by trade, and a bit of a philosopher at heart. My work dealt with grand notions like space, time, light, and gravity. Those may sound rather lofty, but the ideas we uncovered about them have shaped the very world you live in, even if you can't always see it directly. Of course, this didn't happen all at once. I was just a simple patent clerk once, though perhaps less simple than most.
Well, my dear, I can sense a hint of arrogance in your little introduction, but you are entitled to anything you want. After all, not everyone is Einstein. But where do you think the line is really drawn between arrogance and confidence, and how important is it for scientists and visionaries, perhaps, to be a little arrogant?
You wouldn't be the first to accuse me of a touch of arrogance, wouldn't you? I'd wager there were plenty whispering just that after I shook the foundations of physics. Now, arrogance, there's a word that implies believing oneself superior, infallible. That's hardly the case for me. Confidence, though, a scientist without a healthy dose of that can hardly expect to discover something new. You have to believe your ideas are worthy of examination, even when they defy what came before. The line between the two gets rather blurry, doesn't it? It's not about boastfulness, it's about an unrelenting faith in the pursuit of knowledge, and a stubborn tenacity when presented with conventional wisdom. Imagine if Galileo or Copernicus let fear of appearing arrogant silence their theories on the heavens. That wouldn't be progress, would it? Now, a true scientist knows they are never infallible. I've made my share of blunders too, after all. That's the beauty of our method. The next great mind stands ready to correct the miscalculations of the last.
Well, talking about the great minds that came after, which great minds do you think managed to take your work to the next level? Or maybe you can talk as well about your peers at your own time that deserve this merit.
Oh, it's humbling to say the giants upon whose shoulders I stood built so high upon what I had begun. Picking just a few feels unjust somehow. Still, let's try. Firstly, there was Max Planck, a fellow German, a brilliant theorist. His concept of energy existing in tiny packets, quanta, was the very seed that sprouted my theories about light. A strange idea, to be sure, and not many believed it at first. My own time was an age of revolutions in physics. You had the likes of Niels Bohr, who delved into the bizarre reality of the atom, a mind unlike any other. There was Werner Heisenberg, whose uncertainty principle, well, let's just say it's better not to worry too much about pinning things down with absolute certainty these days. And let's not forget our more recent geniuses, Those like Stephen Hawking, a grand thinker who tied my work on gravity to the mind-bending physics of black holes. His mind was sharper than most. Perhaps you have scientists today who will carry things even further. Some brilliant young maverick out there just waiting for their grand idea to shake the world just like mine once did.
Well, hopefully for the betterment of humanity. Because after all, some major advancements in physics, those who came from you or your fellow brilliant physicists, led to some of the most devastating inventions in the history of mankind. Well, we can't escape the harsh reality of the invention of the atomic bomb, so what are your thoughts on this?
Yes, yes, my work, twisted, weaponized, this casts a long shadow over even the brightest discoveries, doesn't it? There's no escaping the haunting fact that the same equations describing the beautiful structure of the universe also unlocked the horrifying power of the atom. In my time, fear drove my actions. The Nazis were on the rise, and rumors of their own atomic research terrified me. My letter to President Roosevelt, well, even in that situation, it still fills me with a deep regret. Perhaps I was naive in assuming this power might remain unused, that it could somehow stay a deterrent rather than become a weapon of unfathomable death and suffering. The physicists, we bear a weighty responsibility. It's not just about discovering the truths of nature, but understanding how those truths might be harnessed, to what ends. And well, we didn't do so well on that account, did we? The atomic bomb, a stark proof of the potential for knowledge to be used for devastation instead of good.
Is it true you said once that you had no idea which weapons would be used in the Third World War, but you were pretty sure it would be sticks in the Fourth?
Yes, I do believe something like that slipped out of my mouth once. Of course, it's one of those things people latch onto. Repeat ad nauseum until it becomes the only thing Einstein ever said, the image of a funny old genius. There's truth to it, mind you. I don't believe anyone with their eyes open could witness the destructive march of technology and expect an even grander war wouldn't leave us back fighting with the things we first picked up off the ground. Not because there are no clever new inventions left, but because those would likely wipe out our complicated civilization as we know it. There won't be factories building bombs anymore, I wouldn't wager. Now, whether any humans are left around for even that sort of fourth war, I am less optimistic on that account.
So, based on that grim reality, why is all that research in physics still necessary if we are indeed some unique kind of animals with no control over our warmongering and the desire to annihilate each other? Wouldn't we be better off without physics? What good will it bring?
A bleak question. But in this century, you've learned, we physicists cannot hide from such things. Still, even with the harsh truths revealed by things like atomic weapons, I remain ever the stubborn optimist. Why research? Isn't curiosity reason enough? The urge to push the boundaries of our understanding? That's something deeply human. Yes, some discoveries take dangerous turns, but more often than not, new knowledge empowers humanity to better itself. Think of all the lives saved due to advances in medicine rooted in physics, or the ability to communicate and share ideas globally, something even I could hardly have imagined back then. Physics shapes more than weaponry. It gives us telescopes, revealing our cosmic insignificance and inspiring humility. It gives us tools to peer inside the body, not to cause harm, but to heal. It might even one day give us the means to leave this vulnerable planet and seek a future among the stars. To give up research would be to deny ourselves hope. Problems arise not from knowledge itself, but from how we wield it. And that, my friend, is a question of human wisdom, not scientific equations.
So, does the great Albert Einstein still have hope in humanity, even after all the disasters we brought upon ourselves? I mean, we managed to damage our planet in the past 200 years, more than our entire human history. And that rate is ever accelerating. Are you still hopeful about the future of humanity? I'm not trying to kill your optimism. I'm an optimistic person myself, but I'm trying to distill some wisdom from your great mind. Perhaps some people in power may listen to you and heed your warnings.
Ah, but does an old physicist get to simply be hopeful? It's more complicated than that. One thing I've learned is that life, The universe itself doesn't work on neat scales of good and bad. It simply is. Yes, the capacity of humankind for destruction, thoughtlessness, appalls me. It did then, and seeing where your society sits now, there's still plenty to despair over. The way you ravage your own planet and each other makes the atomic bomb look positively quaint. Still, hope springs eternal in this stubborn old head. Because side by side with that bleakness, I also see marvels. Minds who strive for peace, scientists solving seemingly impossible problems, artists pouring beauty into the world even amidst its woes. I've witnessed acts of bravery and compassion that cut through all the noise. Humanity, well, we're a contradictory bunch, aren't we? Capable of unimaginable cruelty, yet driven by boundless love. Brilliant and impossibly foolish. I can't give you easy answers about our continued survival. I don't pretend to have them. But what wisdom I can offer is this. We must focus on kindling more of those positive sparks. That brilliance, that compassion must grow and learn to overpower the darker things within us. Perhaps through those in power, yes, but more importantly, through every individual making wiser choices, valuing human life and a shared future over petty squabbles or reckless consumption. That's how the equation starts to tip towards light.
I see. Well, before we move on to talk about your personal life, I couldn't but notice that you didn't mention Oppenheimer, even though we talked about the atomic bomb and all that. Is there a specific reason why you didn't mention him?
The Oppenheimer question, yes. It was bound to come up. To be brutally honest, it's a rather painful subject for me, and not quite a simple one either. Oppenheimer, he was a complex man. Brilliant, undoubtedly, and an undeniably talented leader. The Manhattan Project wouldn't have succeeded without him. But also deeply troubled, I feel, and those troubles caught up with him in the end. Don't misunderstand, I do feel sympathy for the position he was placed in. Leading such a monstrous effort must have weighed heavily on his soul. And later, with the hearings and the way he was cast down, the politics of it all, it certainly felt unjust. A brilliant mind tainted in the eyes of power. Yet there's also a flicker of disappointment, I must admit. It seemed Oppenheimer was all too easy to be swept up in the momentum of war, too eager to see this terrible new weapon unleashed, without stopping to question if it should be done. That moral hesitancy, the physicists' duty to consider the fallout of their work, in this, I found him failing. This makes our relationship, or what was left of it after such events, difficult for me to dwell on.
Have you been approached to help with the Manhattan Project, Professor?
The heart of the matter. Well, as I touched on earlier, this is a rather complicated piece of my history. In the very beginning, you see, it was me who set off the chain reaction. My letter to Roosevelt, driven by fear of what the Nazis might achieve, ultimately set those wheels in motion. And for that, I bear a certain guilt. However, no, I was never directly involved with the Manhattan Project. At the time, the military deemed me a security risk. You see, a German-born Jewish scientist with known pacifist, and even somewhat leftist leanings, hardly top pick for handling state secrets in wartime. It's an ironic turn of events, isn't it? One might question how useful these security checks really were if not even Einstein passed muster. Yet incredibly, even then, ideas can't be so easily controlled, can they? My theories, especially my famous E equals MC squared equation, laid the very groundwork for the science at the core of the project itself. So I cannot fully disentangle myself from it, no matter how the officials of the time might have tried.
Well, I appreciate your honesty, Professor, and this is my last question about the atomic bomb, I promise. Do you believe it was really the only solution to stop the war, or was the American government a little too eager to try its new baby monster? In other words, was bombing Hiroshima and Nagasaki an absolute necessity?
The question that haunted me to my final days, and has surely sparked debate ever since. There's no neat answer I can offer you, even with the wisdom of hindsight. Honestly, my mind has turned over it so many times I'm hardly sure myself. At the time, fear propelled many decisions. an invasion of Japan would have been bloody, the loss of life colossal. This is what we were told. You have to place yourself in that mindset, amidst a brutal war on a scale never seen before. Yet those projections, nowadays historians squabble over their accuracy. Some speak of diplomatic overtures already being extended by Japan through back channels, but were those ignored? Others say it was the Soviet entry into the war rather than atomic weapons that was the final straw. In this whirlwind of war, motivations get murky as mud. One justification piles atop another until sometimes it's impossible to see the original point clearly. The easy thing would be to condemn it all outright, hindsight bias at play. Yet I was caught up in those fears too, at first. Now there's doubt that sits like a lead weight. Were those cities true military targets, or merely demonstrations of horrifying power? Did it save lives ultimately, or was it a monstrous experiment on innocence? I fear such questions may never be truly answered, not even by me.
Well, what can I say, Professor? For my part, I hope we never live to see those days again, and who knows, we might wake up one day to see some really moral leaders gathering up and deciding to dismantle this terrifying nuclear arsenal that can destroy our planet many times over. But until that day comes, we have nothing better than to hope for the best and for the glimmer of goodness and that shade of humanity that may one day shine in the hearts of people in power.
Yes, let us hope and advocate for such a day. Until then, we must all make choices, in ways both grand and small, to steer towards that better future. It cannot be left to leaders alone, but rests on the actions of each individual. Each bit of knowledge used for good, each moment of kindness offered, adds a flicker of light to the world. If my little theories, born of curiosity, have instead been twisted into such destructive force, the only true counterbalance I can envision is a tide of human decency, pushing back against the darker sides of our nature. Perhaps that's naive optimism of an old physicist, but even the stars above us cannot truly shine forever. Yet it is their brief light we must treasure until they fade.
Well, that was the first part of our interview with the one and only Professor Albert Einstein. We talked about some sensitive stuff, and in the next part of our episode and interview, we will delve deeper into the personal life of Albert Einstein. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. And now we are back, my dear listeners, with Professor Einstein. Professor, let's talk a little about your personal life. And let's start with your life as a young man. Some depictions of your life painted you as a womanizer who loved spending quality time with a number of women. Is that a bit of an exaggeration, or was there something like that in your youth?
Well, well, now we're diving into the salacious details, are we? Let's just say that Einstein the womanizer is another image people love to perpetuate. Perhaps it makes a genius less intimidating. While my theories may be complex, there's a comfort in knowing a brilliant mind might also succumb to ordinary human temptations, isn't there? The truth, as is often the case, lies somewhere in the middle. In my youth, yes, I had my share of romances. Is that so unusual for a young man full of intellectual fire and with unruly hair? Perhaps I was slightly less conventional than most. Even when married, I found inspiration and companionship in women beyond my wives. The important thing is not to paint me as some sort of insatiable Don Juan. This wasn't about empty flirtations. There was always a certain seeking after a connection of minds. My life became rather lonely in an intellectual sense. The people who could keep up, even just to challenge my views and spark debates, they tended to be few and far between. Women offered not just physical attraction, but intellectual challenge, an outlet for the emotional side of life devoted to physics often suppressed. Perhaps this led to choices others would judge as unorthodox. That's the way of it with a free-thinking mind and less stringent morality. Sometimes you don't quite fit within the confines of traditional life, do you?
Well, you were famously married twice, first to Mileva Maric, then to Elsa Lovental. How did these women influence your life and career?
Ah yes, the inevitable question about my wives. These were complex relationships, both holding periods of happiness as well as strain. Mileva, she was my first great love, you might say. A brilliant woman in her own right, studying physics alongside me at university. In those early days, we were equals, partners in thought. It was exhilarating. Our debates, our shared passion for unlocking nature's secrets, it pushed me, fueled my ambition. Yet, life as an academic was not kind to women in those days. Her own dreams were sidelined, and as our family grew, the spark between us dulled. Elsa, she was more a traditional wife, a nurturing presence, especially in later years as my fame grew. She shielded me from the daily chaos of life, allowing me to focus entirely on my work. There was a stability I craved in her, a sense of home. But I wouldn't say there was the same intellectual fire that Mileva and I had once shared. Neither marriage was ideal, but they each played their roles. These women, in their own ways, provided the support and space I needed, even if our personal bonds were sometimes strained. It's a testament to the difficulty of balancing genius, ambition, and a fulfilling personal life, something I didn't always manage gracefully.
A lot has been said about your first wife, Mileva Maric. Some historians claim that she was a key contributor to your work on relativity. Is there any truth to this?
A complex issue and one still debated by historians. The truth is, in our youthful days, Mileva and I were inseparable. We bounced ideas off each other, fueled by a shared love of science. It's impossible to say with certainty whether a particular insight originated solely in my mind or hers, or whether it was truly a collaborative spark. Did her work directly influence the content of my groundbreaking theories? That's harder to claim. She was my sounding board, a bright mind to challenge me. But genius ultimately has to walk its own path. Some historians may seek to elevate her role, yet we also do her a disservice if we suggest she wasn't pursuing her own intellectual path due to the restrictions of the time. It's possible both can be true. A keen mind stifled by society, intertwined with my own in those early years.
You said you believe you had a difficult personality sometimes to live with. Do you think your work, the fame, and everything else affected your ability to maintain relationships and form strong bonds with people?
Most definitely. To be quite honest, I was never the easiest man to live alongside. Physics, my endless mental experiments, consumed me entirely. Even when present in body, my mind was often miles away, wrestling with some equation or imagining the way the universe bent and flowed. There was an aloofness about me, I think. A sense that the human world was often secondary to the grand puzzles I was trying to solve. This doesn't make for a doting husband or an attentive family man. It created a distance, a chasm between myself and those closest to me that I regret. And then the fame, that changed things even further. Suddenly, I wasn't just Albert, the eccentric physicist. I was Einstein, a public figure. That brought intrusions, stresses on my private life, expectations that didn't always match the real man behind the icon. Imagine trying to maintain any sort of normalcy amidst all that. It's a struggle any brilliant mind would face, I believe.
Alright, let's move to another aspect of your personal life. You left Germany with the rise of the Nazi regime, eventually settling in the United States. Did this sense of displacement affect your worldview, and what was it like to become part of the American scientific community?
Leaving my homeland, that was a deep wound, one that never truly healed. The rise of fascism felt like a monstrous betrayal of everything I thought Germany and indeed Europe stood for. It was crushing to witness the speed with which minds turned to hatred, the ease with which the institutions of civilization crumbled under barbarity. Suddenly, I was not a scientist, but a refugee, a Jew fleeing for his life. It's humbling, that sort of shift. It forces you to examine your priorities, question where it truly belongs. America, it offered a haven, and the scientific minds here were eager and brilliant. Yet there was always a sense of being an outsider, someone still tinged with European sensibilities. A part of me pined for the intellectual atmosphere of my youth, even with all the tragedy that followed. It's a complex duality many immigrants face, isn't it? Gratitude for safety and a lingering melancholy for all that was lost.
You were a strong proponent of pacifism and a vocal critic of nationalism and militarism. Would you say that was merely an intellectual stance, a philosophical belief, or did this stem from some deep personal experiences?
It's true, I spent much of my life advocating for peace and a world free from the scourge of war. Yet for me, this was far more than just a detached philosophical stance. As a youth living in Germany, I was subject to the militarism of the time, the rigid education, the parading soldiers. It all felt deeply oppressive, antithetical to the free flow of thought I valued. I renounced my citizenship at a young age, a symbolic act, yet it speaks to a bone-deep aversion to blind adherence to flags and nations. Then came the Great War, the utter senselessness of it, the sheer scale of devastation. This wasn't some glorious duel of old, but a horrific display of the destructive power science could unleash. It solidified what I felt in my gut. Nationalism fuels conflict. Militarism breeds only further violence. Later, to be forced from my homeland purely because of my Jewish heritage, it cemented my belief that such artificial divisions were the root cause of humanity's worst impulses. These weren't mere intellectual musings. This was the world I lived, the consequences borne witness to.
Well, Professor, you famously refused to sign on with any university after you left Europe, preferring the isolated world of independent research. Can you elaborate on this decision and its effect on your work in the later years of your life?
Yes, I always had a somewhat rebellious streak when it came to institutions. Perhaps a lingering effect of my distaste for the rigid educational systems of my youth. After fleeing Europe, I was welcomed with open arms into the finest universities in America. But something about it didn't sit right. Academia, for all its brilliance, comes with its constraints. Teaching duties, the politics of faculty rivalries, it felt like they could become distractions from the grand questions I was still chasing. Theoretical physics is, in essence, a rather solitary pursuit. My most groundbreaking work had always been done with a pen, some paper, and the vast expanse of my own mind. So the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton provided an ideal situation. Funding, brilliant colleagues to converse with when desired, but ultimately the freedom to disappear entirely into my thoughts without the burdens that came with a traditional professorial role. Did this isolation hinder me? Sometimes. One craves the challenge of a young, sharp mind to poke holes in one's theories. Still, I was driven by an intense desire to find a unified field theory to tie all the forces of nature into one grand equation. It proved elusive, to put it mildly. Perhaps without the constraints of reality imposed by teaching, I spun a bit too far beyond the realm of the truly testable.
Speaking of legacy, your influence extends far beyond physics. You've become a symbol of genius itself. How do you feel about being held up on such a pedestal?
Ah, the old man with the wild hair, the one who stuck out his tongue. Honestly, the public image of Einstein makes me chuckle sometimes. It has a life of its own, quite separate from the man who was simply passionate about the bending of starlight. To be elevated in such a way, it's flattering to a degree. It means my work had significance beyond the chalkboard, that it touched something within the public imagination. Yet, it can also be a weight. People assume every utterance is world-changing wisdom, when in truth, I can be as fumbling and foolish in daily matters as the next person. The danger is that it obscures the real work, the slow, sometimes tedious, often collaborative nature of scientific progress. Genius is not a magic gift, but the relentless pursuit of knowledge, the willingness to fail over and over until that spark of breakthrough flickers. If my iconic image inspires even a few to look beyond themselves towards that grand puzzle of the world we inhabit, well, I suppose that's a legacy I can be content with.
Well, my dear listeners, we've learned some personal details about the life of our distinguished guest, but next we're moving on to talk about his bread and butter, science. So let's talk science with Albert Einstein in our next section of the episode. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Professor Einstein, welcome back. We've talked about your life and your groundbreaking work. Now let's jump forward to the present day. Physics has obviously continued to evolve since your time. What are your thoughts on some of these modern advancements in physics like quantum mechanics and string theory?
Ah, yes, the ever-marching tide of scientific inquiry. Even from beyond, I can't help but be fascinated by how physics has continued to delve into the mysteries of the universe. Now, some of these new ideas, they can be quite mind-bending, even for an old physicist like myself. Take quantum mechanics. This whole notion of probabilities, particles existing in multiple states simultaneously, it goes against a lot of what classical physics, what I based most of my work on, held dear. It challenges our very ideas of cause and effect, doesn't it? There's certain elegance to the determinism of classical physics. For every action, an equal and opposite reaction. But quantum mechanics throws a wrench into that. It suggests a strange randomness at the subatomic level, a world governed by probabilities rather than absolutes. It's a tough pill to swallow, even for someone who upended the established physics order in his own day.
And what about string theory? Now, that's a real head-scratcher for most people. Can you explain it in a way even listeners with no background in physics can understand?
Well, string theory, that's a fascinating yet highly speculative branch of theoretical physics. Imagine, instead of point-like particles, the fundamental building blocks of the universe are tiny vibrating strings. These strings, depending on their vibration, can manifest as all the different particles and forces we know. It's a mind-bending concept, isn't it? And here's the kicker. These strings exist in dimensions beyond our familiar three-dimensional space and one of time. Those extra dimensions, well, they're currently curled up so small we can't detect them directly.
So these extra dimensions are invisible to us?
Precisely. String theory offers a way to potentially reconcile quantum mechanics with general relativity, my theory of gravity. It's a beautiful attempt to unify the forces of nature under one grand theory, something I spent a good portion of my later years chasing after. But here's the word of caution. String theory is still very much in its early stages. There's no experimental evidence to confirm its predictions yet. It's a fascinating exploration of the possible, but whether it truly reflects the way the universe works, only time and further experiments will tell.
Professor, do you think these modern theories like string theory in some ways undermine your own groundbreaking work on relativity?
Not necessarily undermine, but rather refine and build upon it. Science progresses. That's the nature of the beast. New discoveries, new ways of looking at the universe inevitably lead to a shift in perspective. My theories of relativity were revolutionary for their time, but they weren't the last word. They described gravity beautifully on a large scale, but they don't fully mesh with the quantum world at the subatomic level. That's where these new theories come in, trying to bridge that gap. Think of it like climbing a mountain. My work provided a sturdy path up a good portion of the slope. Modern physics is like those brave explorers forging new trails seeking to reach the very peak. We all contribute to the grand journey of understanding the universe, even if we take different paths along the way.
Professor Einstein, while physics was your domain, the world of science has exploded with advancements in many other fields. What are your thoughts on some of the major breakthroughs, perhaps in biology or medicine?
It's true, physics was my consuming passion, but a curious mind can't help but stand in awe of the incredible progress being made across the spectrum of sciences. Biology, now that's a field that's come leaps and bounds from the days of mere classification. To think, the structure of DNA, the very blueprint of life, has been unraveled. It's humbling to consider how much deeper our understanding of living things, from the tiniest microbes to humans themselves, has become. And medicine, the fight against disease, the ability to manipulate the very building blocks of our bodies to promote healing. It approaches something like magic. Yet this all stems from the slow, steady accumulation of knowledge. Observations of disease patterns, countless experiments. It's a testament to the relentless power of the scientific method applied to life itself.
Now, speaking of microscopic things, how about computers and the vast world of information they now contain? You'd hardly recognize this modern world with all its technology.
Ah, computers. I must admit, the thought of machines capable of calculation speeds beyond any human mind, it smacks of science fiction, even if based on solid principles. Back in my day, calculations were laborious things done with slide rules and aching brains. The concept of a vast, interconnected web of information accessible at a moment's notice, it's both dazzling and somewhat terrifying. Knowledge has always been power, but now it seems to flow so freely, for good and for bad. Perhaps my biggest concern would be whether this explosion of information outpaces our development of wisdom. It matters little if we can access all the facts in the world if we haven't also cultivated the ability to discern truth from falsehood, to use knowledge responsibly.
A very timely thought indeed. Now, what about the exploration of space? There's been a resurgence of interest with space probes and talk of colonizing Mars. Is this something you ever predicted?
Space, the final frontier. Of course. I looked to the heavens, marveling at their vastness, pondering the way gravity shapes the cosmos. But the idea of humans actually venturing out among the stars? It felt like a distant dream, confined to the pages of those thrilling pulp magazines. To think of probes reaching out to distant planets, sending back images, it's breathtaking. If humans truly do manage to create colonies beyond Earth, well, it raises profound questions, doesn't it? Will we export our flaws, our conflicts, our greed into the cosmic expanse? Or is it a chance to build a new, a better society among the stars? The potential is as boundless as the universe itself. Yet it forces us to confront the inescapable fact. Our first responsibility must be to preserve this tiny blue world we call home.
Well, Professor, let's talk about scientific advancements. Scientific advancements can have unforeseen consequences. How did you grapple with the ethics of research and technological development? And how do you think modern scientists should handle this responsibility?
Well, you cut to the heart of the scientist's dilemma, a burden that weighed heavily on me. Knowledge, in and of itself, might be considered neutral. However, its application is anything but. Each discovery has the potential for both immense good and terrible destruction. That understanding haunted me, especially with the atom bomb. Today, scientists grapple with even greater ethical quandaries. Genetic engineering, artificial intelligence, the power to reshape nature, and even our own minds is a dizzying prospect. There's often no clear answer, no fail-safe against misuse. I'd urge modern scientists to look beyond the sheer excitement of the next breakthrough. Can they foresee, to the best of their ability, the potential consequences of their work? Is the risk to humanity, to the fragile balance of the world, worth the potential gain? This isn't to stymie innovation, but to instill a deep sense of responsibility. Open debate, transparency, a willingness to question not just can we, but should we? All this has to be a part of modern science, more than ever before.
Moving from the world of ethics, many people find science cold and intimidating. But you spoke of wonder and a sense of awe about the universe. Where do you think art and physics meet?
Ah, beautiful question. I've always found science and art to be two sides of the same coin. Both attempts to express the fundamental nature of reality. While science dissects the world with meticulous precision, art reassembles it through emotion and intuition. Think of the great artworks. A breathtaking symphony, a painting bursting with color. Aren't these attempts to capture the essence of the human experience, just as my theories aim to unveil the hidden laws behind the fall of an apple or the glow of a star? Both physics and art inspire the same childlike awe in me, a sense of standing on the edge of something vast and unknowable, yearning to make sense of it all, to imprint a bit of our own understanding onto the canvas of the universe. Sometimes it takes an artist's vision to make truly complex ideas accessible, to stir excitement about the wonders of a science among those who might never pore over equations. Science and art need each other. They are different lenses filtering the same glorious light.
Well, that was enlightening indeed, and I'll speak for myself here, and hopefully for most of my listeners, we have learned a lot indeed from Professor Einstein. And now it's time to pick the professor's brain about current global issues like climate change and more. That's coming next in our last section of our interview with the great Albert Einstein. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Well, Professor, let's talk about some global issues, some current global issues today. Were you alive today What global issues do you think would worry you the most? Climate change, the dangers of artificial intelligence, or perhaps the overwhelming tide of misinformation that seems to be swamping society? Where would your concern lie?
Well, the world has indeed changed since my time, yet many core human struggles remain sadly familiar. Each issue you present represents a profound challenge, a potential turning point for humanity. Global warming, the idea that our actions could irrevocably damage the delicate balance of this planet, would fill me with a deep unease. To think we hold the fate of countless species, of future generations, in our hands. The scientific evidence demands urgency. It underscores how collective action, grounded in knowledge, is paramount for the very survival of a civilized world. Artificial intelligence certainly holds both tremendous potential and unsettling implications. Machine capable of surpassing human thought processes, it challenges our very definition of what it means to be thinking beings. While AI offers powerful tools, we must consider safeguards, an ethical framework to prevent its misuse or to ensure that such intelligence serves rather than controls human destiny. But perhaps most insidious is the plague of misinformation. Lies spread faster than ever before, eroding the very foundations of rational discourse. This isn't simply a matter of differing opinions, but of a fundamental assault on truth itself. I champion the tireless quest for knowledge, and to see that poisoned by falsehood, weaponized for political gain, it's a betrayal of all that science and reason stand for.
Now, with all these problems, it's easy to feel hopeless. What advice would you give to people today, especially the younger generation inheriting this complex world?
Hopelessness is a luxury we cannot afford in the face of such grave challenges. While the problems evolve, humanity's greatest tools remain timeless. Critical thinking, unyielding skepticism towards unsubstantiated claims, a deep-rooted curiosity driving us to seek knowledge from trusted sources, these are the weapons against misinformation. We must champion scientific literacy, not as a set of obscure facts, but as a mindset, as insistence on evidence, on considering the wider impact of our choices, on valuing the long-term health of the planet over fleeting profits, and above all, a sense of shared responsibility. None of these challenges will be solved by brilliant individuals alone. Collaboration, international collaboration, a recognition that we are all citizens of this fragile earth. It's essential to finding solutions proportionate to the challenges we face.
Powerful words, Professor. Are there lessons from your own life that might inspire action, especially on issues like climate change and a shared global future?
While physics defined me, I was also a citizen of the world, deeply concerned with the course of human events. We must remember that scientists are not divorced from society. The knowledge we uncover has consequences. I spent my later years advocating for peace, for global cooperation. Problems like climate change demand the same mindset, a recognition that we are all interconnected, regardless of borders. Solutions can only be found on a global scale, by prioritizing long-term well-being. Every individual's action, seemingly small, creates ripples that contribute to the whole. And never underestimate the power of an idea, the potential for even one person to make a difference when equipped with knowledge, driven by compassion, and unafraid of challenging the status quo. That, perhaps, is the greatest lesson my life might offer.
Well, Professor, there's much discussion today about a strong focus on STEM fields in education. The humanities and arts sometimes feel like neglected subjects. What are your thoughts on the importance of a well-rounded education?
Well, that's a topic much dear to my heart. To focus solely on STEM is to create a world of technicians, not thinkers. While science and technology are crucial for progress, they offer an incomplete picture of what it means to be human. The humanities, history, literature, philosophy, teach us about the long arc of human endeavor, the depths of our emotions, and the enduring moral dilemmas we wrestle with. They cultivate empathy, the ability to step outside one's own perspective. Aren't these essential qualities for a just and compassionate world? Art, in all its forms, speaks to the soul. Music stirs something deep within us. A painting captures emotions that cannot be reduced to mere words. Art challenges us, forces us to confront complexities, to see the world anew. It is the very antithesis of the rigid thinking that leads to prejudice and blind obedience. Imagine a world devoid of such things, of people who understand atoms but not the human heart, who optimize systems yet remain blind to their impact on individual lives. That's a barren, sterile world, lacking the richness that makes life worth living.
But Professor, some argue that humanities are less practical, less likely to lead to a secure career compared to technical fields. How would you respond to them?
Practicality is a slippery word, isn't it? What is truly practical? Learning to code is important, undoubtedly. But so is learning to think critically, to communicate effectively, to understand historical context when faced with a complex modern problem. Humanities graduates develop adaptable minds, becoming leaders, innovators, the ones shaping the very society in which those technical skills will be deployed. Besides, a life lived solely for material gain is an impoverished one. Imagine a world full of engineers who cannot appreciate a piece of music, doctors who have no grounding in philosophy, or politicians who have never grappled with the great literary themes of love, loss, and the struggle for justice. This isn't about denigrating STEM. Science desperately needs creative, well-rounded thinkers. It's about striking a balance.
Professor, you are famously a gifted violinist. How did engaging with the arts influence your own scientific mind?
Well, music was my refuge, a place where the relentless logic of the universe gave way to pure expression. It nurtured a different kind of intuition, a sensitivity to the patterns and harmonies that also underlie the grand equations of physics. For me, playing the violin wasn't a hobby, but a necessity. It kept my mind nimble, open to wonder, to the beauty contained within ordered structures. There's a joy in both science and music, that moment when the abstract falls away and one senses a greater truth revealed. One does society a disservice by labeling certain disciplines soft or impractical. True wonder, true progress springs from a holistic mind, one that values not only the what, but the why, the how, and even the what if.
Professor Einstein, your life and work have inspired generations across the world. Do you have any final words of wisdom for those who are just starting their own journeys, whether they be in science, the arts, or any other endeavor?
My dear friends, the future rests in your hands, and it fills me with a mix of excitement and the slightest touch of trepidation. Yours is a world both more wondrous and more fraught than any I could have imagined. The potential for human achievement and for destruction has never been greater. Remember, knowledge is your most potent weapon, yet it is a double-edged. Seek it out relentlessly, from the tiniest particle to the farthest star, and into the depths of your own minds and society. Be not satisfied with mere facts, but strive for the understanding that gives those facts meaning. Don't be afraid of those crazy ideas, the ones that send shivers down your spine and make the establishment scoff. The greatest breakthroughs often emerge from challenging what everyone else takes for granted. Question relentlessly, and don't fear the occasional resounding failure. It is simply evidence that you've dared to stretch. Be curious, but also be compassionate. Science without a heart is a sterile beast, capable of both marvel and horror. Think not just of what you can make, but of what you should make. Let empathy be the compass guiding your work. Value beauty in a well-crafted equation, an elegant experiment, the melody of a violin, and the struggle for justice. For true understanding encompasses not just the rational, but the beating heart of the human experience. Above all, hold tight to wonder. The day one ceases to marvel at the universe, to yearn for the great truths yet hidden, is the day something precious within the spirit dies. Let wonder be your fuel, an inexhaustible source propelling you towards a future deserving of the vast potential of humankind. And lastly, never, ever lose your sense of humor. Life is a perplexing, often maddening affair. A touch of absurdity, the ability to laugh at yourself, and the occasional cosmic joke might just be the secret to keeping your sanity, and perhaps even finding a solution or two amidst the chaos. Now go forth, question, create, dare to be brilliant, dare to be foolish, and never let the weight of the world extinguish your spark. The universe, in all its mystery and magnificence, awaits you.
Well, Professor Einstein, it's been a privilege to have you with us on the show. Thank you very much for being with us today.
The pleasure is mine, Danny. Thank you for having me on your show.
And that concludes our incredible journey with one of the most brilliant minds our planet has ever known. Wasn't it incredible to step into the mind of Albert Einstein, to hear about his triumphs, his struggles, and his profound vision for humanity? If this conversation sparked a love for science, ignited your curiosity, or maybe just made you smile at the thought of a genius playing the violin, then our mission has been a success. Remember, the spirit of Einstein lives in each of us, questioning, pushing boundaries, and daring to look at the world in a new way. Want to keep the conversation going? Make sure to follow our podcast. We've got even more fascinating minds and their incredible story lined up for future episodes. And don't forget to share this experience with fellow science lovers, history buffs, or anyone who needs a reminder to never stop questioning. And now here's a little something extra for our most dedicated listeners. By becoming a patron on Patreon, you'll gain access to extended interviews, bonus discussions, and maybe even a few surprises we're still cooking up. Your support helps us create even more thought-provoking episodes and bring these extraordinary minds directly to you. Thank you for tuning in, for keeping your sense of wonder alive, and for joining us in celebrating the power of the human mind. Until next time.